Hey everybody, welcome to the Indie Film Review. I'm Jared. With me is Dan. Hi Dan, what's up?
Hi Jared.
Dan, I'm so confused. What do we do on this show?
We like to watch independent films and then review them. Giving an analytical eye to the films that you might not have on your radar.
And sometimes are we like silly and fun?
Of course, every single time we're silly and fun. I keep listening
every single time.
If you want to hear some silly and fun times, I'm sure this episode will have some, but last episode, episode 90, is some hot shit there.
You know, what we like to do on this show is just talk about the last episode that we did for 30 minutes, which is the complete runtime of the show, so I hope you enjoy that. Well, today, class, we watched The Place We Hide. Ooh. Bum, bum, bum. I believe it came out 2019? Is that a 2019 or 2020? I'm not sure, but it's done by Eric Bernard. And this was submitted to us by...
somebody from the marketing department, probably.
Emily Johnston. Yeah. So we got hit up by them to check it out, and I was like, hell yeah, let's do it. And then we did, Dan. And then we watch the film. That's how the show works.
That is how the show works. We get submissions, we watch them, and then we talk about them.
That's right. Is everyone clear? Are we all up to date on how this works? Jesus Christ.
Why do we have to do this every single day?
I know.
Don't you guys get it by now? Jeez.
We don't even really want to do the show, but people keep emailing us and asking us to review their movies.
In the last week, we had like 5 submissions. It's like, holy shit.
Oh, yeah. It's out of control.
we're going crazy.
It's so good. And then we have to like be responsible adults and like, you know, reply to them.
And have a schedule.
Like, okay, yeah. We're going to do this and like actually review the movies. And just...
we could gain traction eventually. Have a self-sustaining podcast. You know, you there's a goal. Like if we no longer have to pay out of pocket for our show, like monetize it just enough to earn the money to keep the show running.
Oh, that would be amazing because we are constantly in the red with this show. I mean, it's only a money pit. But I love doing it so much.
I can't complain too much.
All right, Dan, please let us know what the heck this movie is about, The
Place
We Hide.
Okay, so The Place We Hide is about a woman who is a very successful psychoanalyst. A modern-day psychoanalyst, might I add. And she gets a call from her ex-husband, and you kind of get to know that her ex-husband's like bad news bears. And she goes home one day, and she gets locked in a... elevator with a person that her husband hired to kill her.
Bum, bum, bum.
And then she psychoanalyzes him because she's a psychoanalyst.
Yeah, and it's like a little cat and mouse game between the two, and they're just like, rawr. And he's like, squeak, 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 because you know, it's like a mouse and a cat, you get it?
Let's go off with like the very first thing that we have to like, I don't know. I feel like it's a disservice not to address this.
Sure.
If you are not okay with a cat and mouse game happening inside of an elevator for about 45 minutes, this film might not be for you. But
it is one of those films where it's like single location. There are other locations, but it's mainly one spot.
So I was not expecting that. But once I got into it, I'm like, oh, because like there's a lot of really good writing in terms of the psychoanalysts or the psychoanalysts and the.
Did you say psychoanus?
Psychoanus. The psychoanalyst and the hitman are very much intellectuals, and it's kind of a battle of wits the entire time. And it's, you know, whenever you have one of these films where you are stuck in one location, you really have to have that intellectual discourse. Otherwise, it's not going to be engaging. And I feel like this film achieved what it was aiming for.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's like, if you think of it in Stephen King terms, both of their mind palaces seem to merge in the elevator, becoming a super mind
love
palace.
In an elevator. I had to do it.
Who does that song? I don't even know if I know that. Aerosmith? I don't think I know that song.
Oh my god, dude.
I'm love in an elevator,
guess
baby.
What you're going to fucking listen to one time this week, because it'll be in the link.
Yeah, I should check it out. I should do my research. You know, homework is what I should be doing.
And it'll be stuck in your head forever.
So, one thing right off the bat, I'm a little annoyed that the lead cast is not at the top of this list on IMDb. I don't know who did this for IMDb, but come on, guys, figure it out. You need to have the top-billed actors on the top of the...
Credited cast sorted by IMDb's star meter. So, whatever the IMDb star meter is sorted.
No, that's stupid. It should just be the top-billed people.
It should be, but the person who's top-billed is... named Detroit, and we'll talk about him whenever we get into the film. But first,
I don't know.
Questions, Jared.
Yes. Okay. So, are you gonna ask me a question? Go for it, Dan.
How did you feel about the flashbacks in this film?
Flashbacks. I liked them because if there were no flashbacks, we'd be in the elevator, and. There's only so many ways you can shoot an elevator. Now, I feel like this movie, they could have gotten a little more creative with how they shot. I mean, there is actually a lot of really cool creative things that they did in terms of the camera work. And there's some, like, I don't know if the psychedelic is the word, but avant-garde kind of strange things that they filmed that actually worked really well and I liked a lot.
I agree.
There's only so many things you can do in an elevator.
I was hoping for more experimental camera work, but they did do a really good job with getting every aesthetically pleasing angle from the elevator. Because think about it. You're in a big box, and you have to make it look like you're in a box. Because if you make the elevator too big, it's going to be unrealistic. So the camera angles have to be tight, and they took pains to make sure that the camera angles were always engaging, they were always different, and we cut back to, like, they were a very big variety of them, I will say that.
But, like, one obvious angle I thought of while watching it was, like, they could shoot from above, you know what I mean? They could have the camera above them. I did like a lot of the things, like, when they would just, it was almost like they were just shooting their feet. Mm-hmm. At certain times, I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. And,
well, that was part of her, like, because, okay, so in the film, the psychoanalyst has this kind of really cool way of getting into people's heads, like she's hypnotizing them.
Yeah.
She uses, like, rhythmic beats that she uses her feet or her hands for. And I can think of some things that could be done with feet and hands.
Now, Dan, remain professional. This is a professional... independent reviewing
I'm talking about
podcast.
In general, okay? Feet and hands are extremities that have use.
Dan, you're a naughty boy, and that's what I like about you.
You walk on your feet, Jared. Jesus.
You walk on your feet.
You grab things with your hands.
All right. No need to brag about it. Jesus. Okay, we get it. You're good at grabbing and walking. Gosh. All right, Dan, how did you feel about the two leads in this movie?
I like them a lot because the psychoanalyst is super narcissistic. I mean, I guess, like, she's outwardly narcissistic. And the hitman, he's narcissistic too, but he's kind of more laid back and he doesn't really bring it out because he has to remain cool for his profession. You know what I mean?
Well, he's like self-righteous... Cool. He's an interesting self-righteous
hitman, for sure. He believes in karma, and he thinks he's doing the world a favor by doing his service. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I guess you can argue that a lot of his reasons are interesting. And even the film kind of calls attention to it, like... Well, we'll get into it, because I don't want to spoil it yet. I will say I'm a little disappointed, because the film opens with a quote from Freud... And Freud is, you know, a very famous psychoanalyst who arguably is the father of psychoanalysis. And I don't know, I feel like the film...
Is that the guy who said that you want to have sex with your mom all the time?
Yeah.
Is that the guy?
I feel like if the inclusion of Freud was either a misstep or they stepped too far away from psychoanalysis and focused too much on the narrative. She is psychoanalyzing him... throughout the entire thing, but just that specific quote from Freud didn't resonate with me as I was watching the narrative as I think they might have hoped.
You know what I kind of thought too is they spent a lot of the first 15-20 minutes of the movie just kind of like doing establishing shots and
that they're never going to go chilling. Back to. Yeah.
Yeah, we're kind of just like chilling with Dr. Stevie, which is the female lead in this, played by Nikki M. Wayland. And she's cool. She's great in this. And I like the other guy.
All the acting is great.
The hitman, David Ussel Madison. I like him a lot. I thought he did a really good job. Can I say this? This is so funny. As soon as I saw him in my notes, I was like, handsome man in suit in elevator. Seems suspicious. That's what I wrote. So it's like immediately I was like, oh, this man is so handsome. I kind of wish I didn't read the synopsis of this film going into it. You know what I mean? I thought I think it would have been more of a little more refreshing.
Because I didn't read it. I went in blind.
Oh, that's good. Because in the email, I read through it. I was like, oh, now I know the whole thing. But it's definitely worth going in blind, I think.
Jared, how did you like the score of this film?
Okay. Score is one of the best things about this movie.
I loved it because it reminded me a lot of classical Hollywood scores, like scores from the 40s and 50s.
Mm-hmm.
And then it had elements of like contemporary scores, like, you know, taking cues from Danny Elfman and Hans Zimmer. But then it went right back into this kind of Tin Pan Alley, you know, typical Hollywood movie score from the 1940s. It was really cool.
The thing I liked the most about this movie was definitely the music, and the second thing I'd say is all the weird avant-garde stuff that they did with the camera. I liked that, too. What was your question, Dan? I kind of forgot. My bad.
The score.
Oh, the score. So, yeah, the score... Because I had a point on the score, I know.
You already answered it.
No. I had a thing I wanted to say, and I got distracted. Because I'm a goldfish man. So, in the beginning of this movie, when the score starts up... I know, Dan. It's okay. Just laugh it out. It's fine. Everything's fine. the intro is so great. It felt like a James Bond movie.
I know.
And I was so psyched. And that kind of gave me a bad expectation because I thought the film was going to be like that. It was like, oh, cool. It's going to be like some secret agent shit.
I went the same exact way. Like, I was a little disappointed it was in the elevator. But, you know, once I was in the elevator, I did enjoy the writing a lot.
Dan, I have one more question for you.
Yes, please.
How did you feel about character development between the two main characters? And I'm talking about the first 20 minutes of the movie. In terms of us learning about the hitman and the main character, Stevie.
That was probably the only part of the film that felt kind of rushed to me.
Yeah.
So yeah,
that's kind of what, like, I'm getting at.
Yeah, the chemistry was there. It got there the more we started to know about them. But what I mean by rushed is it was just kind of already put into place. And we had to, like, the film went faster than we could catch up with it, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like I don't know how I would fix that. Because it works in the time frame that they have.
Mm-hmm.
But they definitely... you know what it is? It's the woman. She's so forward. Like, her character's written as a forward person. And she's just like, well, I'm going to start talking to you now. And that it's kind of off-putting, I guess. Because, like, you're in a fucking elevator. It's like, oh, shit. Now
well, it seems like... It seems like in the beginning, when they're stuck in the elevator, that Dr. Stevie almost already knows that this guy's a hitman. And she starts to try to mess with him. Before she's supposed to know.
Well, no, I wrote this down in my notes. I said, does she get off on fucking with people? Because immediately she just was like, let me fuck with this guy. It's like, why would a psychoanalyst do that?
Why? So I was trying to understand her personality, and I don't think the movie did a good enough job showing us who this character is in the first 15 minutes. Like I was saying earlier with we're just going to show like her on a train, her getting dressed, blah, blah, blah. And it's like her not interacting with anyone. And the only person that she interacts with is her assistant, who she treats pretty well. She I think lets her have like a bottle of wine or something, if I remember.
So
she's kind of nice to her. But I feel like there could have been more examples of her interacting with people so we could get her personality before getting to... this scene in the elevator. Like, she could have interacted with, like, a homeless person. Like, I need to understand. I still didn't get who she was until we had some time in the elevator.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of felt like that was a problem. And then with the hitman, because he kind of comes out of nowhere, it would have been interesting to kind of follow him around and just, like, without us knowing that he's a hitman, I guess.
Yeah.
I just kind of wanted to know more about these characters before we get to that part. Because usually, first 30 minutes of the film, you are getting to know everyone. You're setting things up. And in this, the movie kind of gets going pretty fast. I think we get into it, like, 20 minutes in.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's, I mean, not every film has to follow that criteria of what I'm saying with this 30 minutes thing. But I just not enough character development for me for the situation that they put these two characters in. It's almost like we're getting that in the second act instead of the first act.
Well, and then that just begs the question, was that done on purpose? But then again, maybe. Like, it feels like those characters and their chemistry is very much shoehorned into the film, like we've been talking about, for sure.
Yeah. Okay, so we're gonna spoil this movie. If you would like to watch it, let's see, because it's technically, I don't think it's out when we watched it, so let me see where it's going to be available. It's going to be available on iTunes, Amazon Prime, Google Play, Microsoft Vimeo, like a bunch of stuff, Fandango, Vudu, all that stuff, on December 1st, so...
December 1st. Get ready for Christmas by getting stuck in an elevator.
Yeah.
With a psychoanalyst.
The Christmas cheer.
It's a Christmas miracle.
Jingle bells, let's get murdered.
So, Jared, let's talk about some of these scenes here.
Yes, let's talk about some of these scenes.
So I want to kind of clarify my point about Freud. I like Freud. I read Freud a lot whenever I was in film school. But there's a point where they talk about karma in this film, because Jack is wearing a pendant that is like a symbol for karma or something like that.
Yeah, that pendant is cool. It's like a Hindu pendant or something.
Yeah, I liked the idea behind it. And I liked also that, you know, the woman is so learned that she knows exactly what it is and she uses that to psychoanalyze it.
Yeah, however, he even comments that she's like a textbook, which I kind of liked.
Yeah. So the problem I have with it is... She basically gets away from him. She wins in the long... Or does she win? I don't know. It's kind of ambiguous. Mm-hmm. But she has a narrative at the end... Or a narration at the end where she's like, maybe we do need people like Jack out there. And that, to me, takes a step away from psychoanalysis and more into the idea of what karma is. And it kind of gave me a conflicting message of what the film is supposed to be about. That's the only reason why I kind of have a problem with the Freud quote being at the beginning, because by the end of the film, it is not it's not the same message, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, in the places we hide, because that's what the whole movie's about, is like, you know, retreating into your unconscious and like living in that, because
your mind palace.
Yes, your mind palace. Jeez, Mr. King.
And now we do a bunch of cocaine in honor of
Sigmund Freud.
Of Sigmund Freud.
Oh, wait, King was too. Yeah, so authors are super into cocaine.
Was Freud on the White Stallion?
Oh, yeah.
Hell yeah, dude.
Woo! That's all Freud did was smoke cigars and do cocaine and then write about penis.
He's like, if I cannot fuck my mother, I will fuck my nose. And then... flying high in the sky, Sigmund Freud. If anyone needs a jingle, I'm really good at it, guys. You can't tell.
Did you have a scene you wanted to talk about, Jared?
So in the beginning, when we have the two characters get in the elevator, I thought it was a little weird how the hitman like immediately gets sweaty. Mm-hmm. Like, we just cut to him, he's like, oh, he's sweaty. And it's like, okay, they're trapped in there. And I like the idea of the hitman being claustrophobic.
Like, vulnerable, yeah.
Yeah. And how, like, this is very difficult for him being in this room. And he just wants to, like, murder this lady.
Kill her and get out, man. What can a hitman do?
And I also like the choice kind of thing where they talk about it, where the doctor makes a conscious choice to risk and take this elevator, even though she knows that... it has not been working properly. She could have taken the stairs.
She even went to do the stairs.
Yeah, and she's like, you know what?
I'm gonna take a minor character who walks by her. She's like, 8 flights? Way to go. And then she's like, do I really want to climb up 8 flights? So yeah, she does make a very conscious choice.
Exactly. There. And that probably would have saved her life, you know? But
well, we learned that the hitman was already in her apartment, so I doubt it.
That's true.
But the elevator could have stalled the hitman, you're right.
Yep. Yeah, he probably would have gotten
to her. You know, if I were a hitman, I probably would have just let her climb up and then pushed her down.
That's messed up. Yeah, he does it in like a way like he's like putting down an animal.
Yeah.
It's almost like a weird sympathy thing. Like he's not a type of hitman where he's like, I'll shoot you or strangle you or whatever, whatever. I don't think he takes pleasure in killing people.
But he does it anyway.
It's just his weird sense of justice where he's going to inject them with a needle and put them down like a sick dog. So, okay, we have all these scenes in the elevator and whatnot, but like his sense of karma, I kind of don't agree with it, because if you think of like the yin and yang and karma, like what goes around comes around and everything, his version of it is like, if you cheat on your wife, then I'm justified in killing you. And I don't think those two things are the same. You know what I mean? Like,
no, they're not.
If you're going to punish someone, those equivalents don't match. And then it's like, okay, well, how do you match that equivalent then? The only real way to do it would be like, this guy cheats on his wife, get him exposed to his wife, then they have to break up. That would kind of be more karma, right? That would make more sense.
Yeah, because death is kind of an easy way out of that social situation.
And then the end of the film is kind of saying like, hey, maybe the hitman is good and maybe what he's doing is righteous, really is righteous. And we should, because like Dr. Stevie and him are working together at the end. And I kind of was like, no, I don't agree with this at all. They're both bad guys. Like, this is not good.
Well, okay, so let's talk a little bit about why the Dr. Stevie psychoanalyst is a bad person. So, okay, I will say Dr. Stevie's backstory is the most confusing part of the film to me. Because she's definitely older. Like, she's played by, not an elder woman, but like, you know, a middle-aged woman. And
elder woman. An elder woman approaches the party. What do you do?
Right?
I cast magic missile.
She's on in her years, and she's a successful psychoanalyst. But what we get is she, at one point, her parents died and left her a shitload of money, and she blew it all on drugs. And then she started hanging out with her boyfriend, and her boyfriend like started whoring her out, and then they kill somebody, basically.
Yeah. Now here's the deal. So in that scene, they get a guy to have sex with the doctor, who's not a, she's like a teenager, like you're saying.
Is she a teenager? That's my question. Is she a teenager then?
She's probably like above 18, let's say.
Okay, so.
In her 20s.
She's in her 20s, and then she finally sobers up, breaks up with her boyfriend, and goes through fucking 10 plus years of school to become a psychoanalyst. Like, that, I don't know, that timeline seems a bit like skewed to me.
I mean, that's okay, because we don't know exactly how old she is. She could be in her 40s or whatever. So I think it makes sense or whatever. And it's just, she really turns her life around, which is pretty amazing. But in that scene, and I also thought it was believable, too. Like, okay. I certainly know people who have been that low and just completely did a 180. Because a lot of those times, like, you have to choose to want to change. And, like, people, like, telling you to change or whatever, whatever. It's like, it's a conscious decision. And that's what she makes. She's like, I don't want this for my life. I'm going to change. I'm going to try to do better. Yeah, you know, like, no one's perfect. So that's what's the whole weird thing about the karma. We're like, this guy could just probably kill everyone. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, he could just go around murdering every single person because nobody is perfect. I've said that like 10 times already. Okay, back to what
you
I actually
buried your dog
about.
Instead of cremating it? Death.
You're dead. That's right, that's right. You don't put the dang dishes in the dishwasher immediately.
Death.
You're dead. Okay, okay. Hey, Dan.
Yeah.
Are you spitting gum into the urinal?
Oh my god.
Death. Immediate death.
I swallow my gum. I shouldn't do it, but
oh, that's death. I'm sorry, buddy. That's death. That is actually a death. So, getting back to my original point. So, we're in this hotel. The guy doesn't pay for his sexual favors that he got. He gets into a fist fight with the boyfriend. The boyfriend starts losing. This dude is like beating him up, and she stabs this man with a wine bottle opener in his neck. Kind of uncalled for, I would say. I mean, no one's life was at risk. They were just fist fighting, right? I mean, I don't know. It It felt like...
But she explains it in the film.
She was drugged up and...
What am I supposed... What is a drugged up, sleep-deprived sex fiend supposed to do in that situation?
Sex fiend? I don't think she was addicted to sex. She was addicted to drugs. But anyways. But no, I actually, Dan, you're making a good point. I completely get what you're saying. That does kind of help that narrative of her. She's not thinking straight.
Yeah, and then the boyfriend gets mad about it. But then basically... That part of the narrative turns into the boyfriend is now blackmailing her.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then she says, no, I'm not going to be blackmailed anymore. And then enters Jack.
Yeah, then he hires the hitman. But then the hitman kills...
One of her patients.
Yeah, one of her patients that was obsessed with her, that was going to kill her. So we have her ex-husband that was going to kill her, and this other guy was going to kill her. Confusingly, the patient's name was Steven... And then the doctor's name is Stevie, and I'm like, what's going on? But, like, I don't know why we had this whole other thing of, like, this other patient, when it could have just been about her and her ex-husband.
It feels a little convenient and too close to home. Like, it's a small world kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I agree with that.
You know what would have been interesting, too, is if there was a third party, like police, who were trying to investigate the serial killer.
Mm-hmm.
This guy's not a hitman anymore. Like, I don't even know if he does this for money. He's just going around killing people who thinks they deserve to die. And I'm like, what is his day job?
Well, apparently he sells insurance, is what he says.
Okay, I was like, how does he get financed to do this?
But he sells life insurance, but then the people who he sells life insurance to are the people who are wanting to take out contracts on people. So I guess life insurance, in quotes, means killing somebody.
Okay, I guess he's getting paid to kill people then. I don't know. A little murky there. But all in all, you know, I enjoyed this movie. It definitely has some issues, but I thought it was a good independent film. I don't know what the budget is for this film. Let me look. I don't think it says on here, honestly. It's certainly not a high budget movie.
Well, I mean, you don't need a high budget. Like, I just watched a documentary about Night of the Living Dead and how that came to be.
Yeah.
It's called Birth of the Living Dead. It's on Amazon if you guys want to watch it.
Oh, cool.
But it showcases, like, how, you know, rinky-dink productions can be and how mm-hmm. they can blow up. Like, you don't need money to make a good film if you have the story for it.
Mm-hmm.
You need a story, you need a camera, and you need, you know, actors.
Yeah, absolutely. And, okay, so my closing thoughts, I thought the film got off to it was a slow start, but once we really started getting into the elevator stuff and the flashbacks and some of the weird psychedelic hypnotizing stuff, like that one scene where, like, the little boy's shooting his father, we didn't even get in all that, so there's a lot of stuff in this movie. But and then he kind of morphs into the grown man shooting his own dad. That was really cool. The music in that was really helping that whole scene.
To kind of piggyback on that, I feel like, you know, the movie rushes its way to the point of being an intellectual cat and mouse game, or a psychoanalytical cat and mouse game. And then as soon as you're there, you're like, oh, okay, I get this. And I'm really engaged in what's being told to me. But I don't know. I don't want to say that there could have been a better way to get to it, because, you know, they took their own creative liberties with it, and it made sense.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely check the film out, especially, like, for the creativity of the score and the acting, I think.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. I appreciate it. I don't know if we have time for recommendations. We kind of went long.
We can do them next week.
Yeah, yeah. We'll probably do it next week. Because all I've been watching is Ozarks. Ozarks is so good. Just watch Ozarks, guys, if you haven't watched it already.
I got stuff to recommend.
Oh, my gosh. Ozarks is the best. All right, Dan, please give us plugs.
Yes, you can find us on Twitter at IndieFilmPod. You can find us on Instagram at IndieFilmReviewPod. You can email us at theindiefilmreview@gmail.com. That is how we got in touch with this wonderful film. So you Yay! Want a film to be reviewed that you have made, give it to us.
That's right. That's right.
Email.
That's right.
Email's easiest.
Hey, guys. Hey, Necropodicon is a really cool site. If you go to necropodicon.com, there is a big old fat link to the Discord. We can come say hello to us. You know, we like to have fun on there and just, like, post pictures of cats, you know? But anyways, there's a lot of great... So there's, like, D&D stuff on there. There's movie stuff. There's improv stuff on there. There's a whole podcast dedicated to evil, which is pretty great. Just, yeah. Like, evil in general. And, like, supervillains and stuff. So, yeah, there's a lot of really fun stuff on there, and you should go check it out. because I demand it. And thank you all for listening so much. I love you. I think about you all the time. I hope you're okay in these challenging times. I know everyone likes to say that, so now I'm saying it. Dan, you have the final word.
Do I? One day, in retrospect, the years of struggle will strike you as the most beautiful. Quote from Sigmund Freud.
This podcast is part of the Knickerpodcon Network.
Hey.
Huh?
You.
Me?
Yeah, you. Are you tired of watching the same multi-billion dollar films over and over again?
I sure am.
What if I were to tell you that there are movies out there that you have never seen before but are also entertaining?
I would say that I wouldn't believe you because you're all big ol' fibber.
Don't just sit there with your thumb up your butt. Listen to Bad Rad Movies Podcast.
Warning, many of these films might not actually be entertaining. In fact, it is all subjective. If you feel like these subjective films are not to your liking, well, then listen to something else, because we will not be responsible for anything that might happen to you after you have watched these films.
Wow, I better go listen to the podcast right now.
That sounds just like me. Wow.